Welcome to the Diversity Remix, only provocative conversations at the intersection of business, politics, and culture. I'm Charlie Echeverry.
And I'm Jesus Chavez.
Today's episode, The Point of No Return. In our deep dive, does last week's storming of the Capitol and the societal lines it crossed mean that we need to revisit the balance between freedom of speech, individual safety, and the ability of private companies to self-govern? Can we unring the bell? And in our Courage or Cringe segment, the House of Representatives' new inclusive language, St. Stacey Abrams, and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Does the new inclusive language adopted by the House of Representatives erase or heighten divisions in the country? Is it okay to appropriate religious imagery and terminology to score political points? Does an award given by the president lose its meaning by virtue of the person occupying the office, or should the dignity of the office transcend the individual? This and a whole lot more on today's episode of TDR. Jesus, I'd say welcome, but it feels like we should be starting this particular episode with, just round the horn, shameful glances at one another for what the country's been through.
It's been quite a week. I was kind of laughing in preparing for this episode because I was thinking about...
Laughing through your tears?
Laughing through my tears a little bit, I guess. Just the amount of things that have happened since we were recording last week.
It's going to be a four-hour show.
Just as a quick reminder, so we tend to record these episodes on Tuesdays, and with it going live on Wednesday. Well, last Tuesday, when we were recording, it was during the Senate runoff. It was the day it was being, you know, all the voting was taking place, and we were just talking about how we didn't know what was going to happen in terms of how soon we will find out who won the Senate races. We were talking about the next day being this joint session in Congress to certify the Electoral College vote. And so knew there was going to be, you know, some news coming up, but I don't think any of us...
No, we couldn't have imagined what went
down. What has happened since. So lots to talk about in this one.
And, you know, it's we're kind of grinning through it, not to make light of the situation, but because it's kind of what you tend to do when you're hit with a bunch of things that you could not have foreseen or expected. I think the one thing that's clear in the conversations I've had over the course of the last week, and of course we're talking about our deep dive issue, which is what happened with the storming of the Capitol building and the kind of sort of societal lines, right, that were crossed by virtue of that.
Yeah.
The one constant that I've heard in my conversations is exactly that sentiment. The fact that it feels to people on a number of different sides of the argument that we've kind of reached a new level, a new low, a new line that was crossed,
that
some people who are perhaps more negative than others think we cannot come back from, and other people who just recognize the fact that it's happened. But there seems to be consensus about that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I think saying it that way is probably the best way to describe it, which is there is this line that was crossed with what happened. And frankly, there's been all kinds of fallout from that event, from a political standpoint, all types of fallout as it relates to how media has handled the situation, how these platforms, which we're going to talk about. But why don't we get into that? Because there's a lot to cover here. And we'll do our best to try to parse these things out as we kind of go through it. But frankly, this is all real-time information. Like, I'm literally getting alerts right now as it relates to some of these things that are taking place. So,
Sure. Look,
to the degree that we can, we'll try to be as thorough as we can and kind of where things sort of sit and where do we see sort of the issues. But also be honest that right now it's, 5 o'clock, 5:26 p.m. Pacific time. So between now and by the time someone listens to this episode, a lot of things could happen, of course. But we'll try to do our best.
Right? 100%.
As mentioned, there was, of course, been a massive fallout on the attack that happened on Capitol Hill that occurred last Wednesday, January 6th, right? And this was, of course, during a joint session of Congress that was there to certify the Electoral College vote for the presidency, right? Which resulted in the Capitol building being breached, which was, first time I heard the stat, it kind of blew my mind away, which was the first time in over 200 years. I think the last time this happened was 1814. By the British, and it was during the 1812 war, right?
Wow.
So it's definitely hit a new line.
That's going back a minute.
It's going back. And at least, I believe the last stat that I saw is at least six people have died as a result of that, including one Capitol Police officer. I think it's been the second one that died as well, but I believe that one was actually a suicide that just happened. Maybe yesterday, the day before. Yeah, so that's really sad. I'm frankly, I don't know if that's part of the six or that's an additional one, because it happened after the obviously the attack occurred.
But a number of people, participants obviously Capitol Police staff, officers, you know, so on all sides of the
fracas. Which is super sad, right, that happened. Now, in terms of, and by the way, there's a lot in terms of what happened during the day, which we're not really going to get into more. We'll talk about the fallout. Of course, we'll try to touch upon it as much as we can. But for President Trump specifically, there's been a lot of fallout in terms of the political response to what many deem were his direct actions that resulted in this kind of event happening, right? So first is, you know, his actions and frankly, his initial response, what I think was a lot of what people also responding to. He put out a video that same day when the breach was taking place, as a way to sort of, in ways, kind of calm people down and get people to basically stop attacking the Capitol, but still pushing this narrative about the election being stolen. As a matter of fact, at one point, I think at the end of it, he literally said, but we love you, like, please go home. And it was like very much like, hey, we're on your side. You're doing the right thing, even though you just stormed the Capitol, which is not really a good thing to do. So that basically, both his initial actions, because he was holding a protest before or while the session was taking place, and his initial response were frankly condemned across the board by, of course, pretty much every single Democrat, but also Republicans. And I think the ones that to me stood out were Lindsey Graham, who's been one that has been on President Trump's side for a long time. And even this one, I think I texted you about this one, Charlie, when it was taking place.
With Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio. Yeah. And look, I'll be the first to admit it. I am not a fan of Marco Rubio, but I really liked the speech that he gave. And this was after the Congress reconvened to continue the count, which was obviously hours after they were able to finally get everyone out of the Capitol building, which was it was taken over for about 4 hours, right?
Yeah.
So there was that initial response, condemnation kind of across the board, although as expected, mostly on the Democrat side, there was a number of Republicans that were, a lot of Republicans, I would say, were condemned the action specifically, what happened with the breach in the Capitol building. There was, I think, general consensus of condemning that. But there was others who specifically called out the actions of President Trump that they felt added to that, right? And those two, to me, kind of stood out because I feel like those are obviously two big voices that have been on his side.
Yeah.
In addition to that, there's been at least 10, maybe not, I think now more, administration officials who have officially resigned in protest, right? And we're not going to get through every single name, but there's some big roles here, right? Transportation of Secretary, by the way, that who also happens to be Elaine Chao, who also happens to be the wife of Mitch McConnell, right? So it's actually pretty important there in terms of him being the head of the Senate, right, on the Republican side. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, kind of across the board, so really big roles. The Deputy Assistant Secretary at the Commerce Department, White House Counsel for Economic Advisors, the First Lady's Chief of Staff, Stephanie Grisham, a bunch of different folks, Assistant Attorney General. So number of people that have basically resigned in protest too, in I think directly really against President Trump.
Sure.
And what they believe his role was in creating the situation. And then, of course, beyond that, there's been very loud and growing calls to remove him from office, right? And you kind of see this across three different sort of sectors.
And just really quickly, before you get into the three different sectors, I think understanding the significance of the resignations, too, in the context that we're talking about. We're talking about a context of, essentially, at this point, what do we have, like a week?
Yeah, that's why it's big, you know?
Of course it is.
To say you're going to walk away from...
It's an exclamation mark at the end of things. And it's also evidence of people, obviously, trying to distance their own legacy, their own personal brands, their own integrity, their own reputation from what's happened with these Capitol riots.
Yeah, the one that I missed, and he's been very vocal, is Mick Mulvaney. I'm sorry.
Mick Mulvaney.
Yeah. Who is was the ambassador to Northern Ireland, but was previously the former White House Chief of Staff,
yeah.
And he's been very vocal in terms of his point of view and what he thought President Trump did in terms of create a situation. But you're right. I mean, it speaks volumes that, you know, in less than 10 days, people are walking away from the administration in a very, very public manner. Especially, I think, to Trump, because President Trump had been one that has been, at least his MO has seemed to be very much that he calls for people to be loyal to him first and foremost. So as someone that does not take resignations lightly, or mm-hmm. or anyone crossing them in any way whatsoever. So
it takes resignations lightly, not lightly, but takes firing very lightly.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is not a subtle move by any means, by any of these
No,
folks.
It's not. It's an exclamation mark. And it's something major, that right? Of all the things that, you know, kind of underline and highlight this disgrace that happened last week. Mm. From a political fallout standpoint, it's probably that. I mean, it's kind of
the biggest one, I think, right now. Yeah,
right. Because what it basically,
and I would say the least expected, right? Because you could imagine Democrats immediately condemning it and going after him.
No, but even the idea of like somebody who vehemently disagrees with what happened, maybe attributes some blame or even a lot of blame to President Trump. Nevertheless, saying, look, I'm already leaving. I'm leaving right. next week. So, like, I'll just leave next week. I mean, for them to go, no, I'm leaving right now, literally right. today is my last day and all of that. It's a significant move.
It is,
and
yeah.
I think it's, you know, hopefully it's a principled one and not a strategic one in some cases. It's a little bit of both.
When you talk about politics, it's probably a little bit of both. I'm sure you're going to get both. But it's in any case, right? So then, of course, then came the calls. And this has been a really interesting sort of area, is that the amount of growing support, this idea of trying to get him removed from office, which is massive for the exact same issue you just described, right? When we're talking about now 9 days, maybe 8 days, right? Because the 20th, mm-hmm. Before he leaves office. And you kind of see that across three different vectors. The first is basically the straight up call of people saying that he should resign, that President Trump should resign. And you see that, of course, in Democrats, but you see more and more Republicans sure. stepping up and actually making that same call. I think the first one that I could think of was from Alaska, right? Senator from Alaska, I forget her name now, but I think she was one of the first ones that I could recall that was very vocal saying that he should be gone from office.
McCaskill,
right?
So isn't it?
Maybe, yeah. And I could literally picture her face, but I can't think of her name. So that was sort of the first sort of vector. The second, which is one that is...
Lisa Murkowski.
It is, okay, perfect.
Yeah.
The second one is that there has been also growing calls for Vice President Pence to enact the 25th Amendment, which, you know, for those that may not know, 25th Amendment basically refers to is when basically a president is no longer fit for duty. Now, what's interesting about this is that
technically when they're incapacitated.
Right, yeah. Which is, that's exactly what I was going to go with, which is really more related to something like a medical situation, mm-hmm. right, where he's hurt or the president, not just the president happens to be hurt, et cetera, and they can't actually do
discharge his office.
Right, but it's been interesting, and especially in that dynamic between, you know, Vice President Pence and President Trump, that in many ways, you know, Pence is kind of coming off as the adult right now, like big time. Not only because of he refused to basically do what President Trump was asking him to do, which is to, like, you know, change who, like, what the electoral votes were going to be during this joint session, which you say he can't do because the Constitution doesn't let him do it.
Right.
Literally. To now, of course, Pence also has said that he is going to attend the inauguration of
Trump is not.
Like, he's coming off as the adult. And
he's discharging his office, right? Which, again, in all of this, I mean, what's also clear to me is, you know, all the things that some of the things are expected, the other things that should have been or that were talked about didn't necessarily come to pass. You know, one of them is like, again, Mike Pence or even some of the people in the cabinet being these sort of sycophants who are just, you know, in with Trump to the death and all this stuff. And yet a lot of these folks have resigned. Or Pence, like, I'll do anything for Trump, yet nevertheless being the guy at the end going like, no, I'm not going to do that.
The Attorney General Barr falls directly in that category.
Same category. He was like, the Wicked Witch of the West.
He's also been pretty critical about what happened.
Specifically tying it back to President Trump. Of course. Yeah. So I think it's been meaningful in that sense to kind of see, in some respects, the true colors, to the extent you can see true colors with anybody in politics, by the way. But to see the true colors of some of these players, and at the same time to just really understand the absolute colossal debacle that this thing was last week. And what, you know, I'm reminded of the saying, I forget exactly who mentioned this, but it wasn't me, that somebody who said that you remember the first thing you hear and the last thing you see.
Right.
So the first thing you hear about Trump and the consciousness politically is him riding down that escalator and having a sort of like, I'm running for office thing.
Right.
That's the first thing you hear. The last thing you see is that Capitol building siege. Like, that is the sum. That is the sort of, like, you know, log line of his presidency. And it is absolutely, you know, devastating for a guy like him who wants to not have those kind of legacies and all that kind of stuff. It's exactly the opposite of what I'm sure he would have envisioned for himself. But it's absolutely crystal clear that is what will be that legacy of this period of time.
You know what was interesting about sort of making this comment about the true colors of some of these folks, and even like Pence, like I said, coming off as the adult, you know, the part of me that is very skeptical also makes me think that the only reason this is happening is because people recognize, is like, you know, they're smelling blood in the water. And everyone was, you know, fear, basically everyone feared Trump because of the power he had, his ability to, you know, as a kingmaker, literally, like if he supports somebody, sure, they tend to win their race. So what happened this, you know, last week was really is that straw that broke the camel's back, right? That was the last of a sort of a series of events just from last week that sort of undermined, I think, President Trump's ability to really control the GOP, right? So the combination especially of the call with the mm-hmm. with the Secretary of State of Georgia,
right,
and that getting, you know, being leaked, and him just coming off as desperate, like slightly insane. I mean, yeah, it was terrible. Like, by the way, I was hearing today, this is hilarious. Well, apparently he farted during the call. And there
the
was
Secretary of State one?
No, yeah, that one. President Trump.
I haven't gotten to that minute.
They literally had the part of the audio, and he says, "Oh, like you could hear it." And he says, "Oh, sorry." Like he reacts to it. I'm like, "Oh, awesome. My God!" Just to add to it, right?
That's awesome.
So you had that. You had really the what happened in Georgia, which mm-hmm. is it's a major upset. The fact that, you know, these two incumbents were
unseated.
It really is in the state,
and that the power of the entire, I mean, really all of Congress essentially, right?
Because yeah, you've got the especially House, in that context, right?
Even though the Republicans gained a bunch of seats in the House, it nevertheless doesn't really matter because right. now they've got a minority in the House, minority in the Senate.
In that context,
and they've lost the presidency.
It's amazing that happened. And you know, many blame President Trump for being mm-hmm. the reason why they lost the seat, because his obsession with the fraud of the election, or his claims of the fraud of the election, really superseded his right. support that he should have been giving to that. So the combination of him not being able to deliver for people that really should have won in almost every scenario, him coming off just looking just really bad in this call, yeah. and then this, you know, bad idea turned really, really worse with this attack on the Capitol Hill, I think is also created with those that had been his allies that have been very supportive or have not dared cross him, which yeah. may be the better way to put it,
yeah.
all of a sudden are now like, well, maybe now you're a little hurt and now yeah. willing to attack. So I think there's a lot of that going on.
It is. And, you know, the moment you see that he's lost the platform, the moment you see that he's lost any kind of position of power, the moment that he gets censored and banned from social platforms, which you can certainly add to the mix here in this conversation, then obviously all the people who thought that they had either feared him or they had something to gain are going to fall away from the wayside. Go ahead.
I was just saying, and there probably isn't a better example of that mm-hmm. than what's going on with these articles of impeachment that just got drafted.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to mention, right? Because you've got the way that I look at it is this whole resign thing, not going to happen in a million years. No. The 25th Amendment, not going to happen, shouldn't happen, in my opinion. That yeah. is a different...
By the way, want to create a new... The breaking news that just came out right yeah. now, Pence just said he's not supporting that, right?
Yeah. Well,
and he shouldn't. I agree with you. That shouldn't be the case.
I think you should create a new amendment if you want one right. where it's like
that's not,
someone's yeah. moral character has to get him. But this is specifically about you are right. incapable
of being an idiot. Somebody, doesn't make them.
You just got shot. You just had a heart attack. You just had an aneurysm, and you need to swear in the vice president quickly because we need somebody to govern the country. So I don't think that should play.
I agree.
So what's
you.
Left? Impeachment and then conviction potentially by the right. Senate. Now that should play. Why? Because that is the mechanism.
That
we have available to us.
Which is also crazy to even be talking about this once again with 8 days left in his presidency. Right now. What's interesting there, that got immediately drafted by the House, of course, by the Democrats on the House. But there was two piece data points that just came out today that I was looking at, which kind of blows my mind. And in line to what we're talking about, one is the New York Times reported today, as a matter of fact, January 12th,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, majority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, right, had told Associated that he believes that President Trump committed impeachable offenses. And that he is pleased that Democrats are moving to impeach him, believing that it will make it easier to purge him from the party. And that's one that you can say, maybe the New York Times got it wrong, maybe it's the wrong source, but there's something to be said about Mitch McConnell.
Man, there's been
some issues between those two guys the entire time.
Not only that, but nothing surprises me in the area of political calculus and how like just cynical a lot of these people are. And look, I don't know, but I'm just saying it would never surprise me to envision.
I agree with
that.
You. And I think, look, there's also, you could point to things that Mitch McConnell has done to definitely make it harder, that made it harder for President Trump to get elected
right.
or reelected.
Right.
Right. Not passing the stimulus, the bill, not pushing for that harder before the election, the presidential election took place, had a direct impact on President Trump. And also right after.
Yeah.
He was for it. So I could definitely see that being the case. The second one, by the way, which is now in the House, at the same time, Representative Kevin McCarthy, who is the minority leader at the House, and had been one of, you know, President Trump's most, you know, steadfast allies in Congress, has asked other Republicans whether he ought to call Mr. Trump to resign in the aftermath of last week's riot in the Capitol. This according to three Republican officials briefed on the conversation. So you're getting basically both leaders, both Republican leaders in the Senate and the House, who are now, at least as it's being reported by New York Times, actively having conversations where they're questioning the leadership, and not just leadership, but the need to remove President Trump from the office, and in many ways get rid of him completely.
Erase
him from the party altogether.
Yeah, and I think that is, frankly, to be expected. I think everybody, and we're seeing the fallout now on the kind of business side, brands wanting to distance themselves.
Tons of that.
Even from the Trump Organization, which at least ostensibly has nothing to do with the administration of the country. But I think that, you know, the brand has become toxic. Yep. I think that if not forever, for at least a significant period of time coming out of this, I think that any platforms or tentacles or ability or whatever you want to call it that the president had in order to tell his own story have been significantly curtailed. And that is something that gives me a dramatic amount of pause, which we can get into in a minute. But the reality of it is that it makes sense that people who are now looking at, I've got to be in Congress for the next 4 years, 8 years, 10 years.
Sure.
How do I detach myself from this or re-spin what my involvement was? All these guys are thinking the same thing. Easy for the Democrats because they've hated. I think the Democrats would have impeached him if he won. If he won the election, I think they would have impeached him.
Yeah.
And I think that
those
articles, let me tell you something, those articles were probably drafted like 2 months ago and they just like put white out over like the thing that they wanted to charge him with.
Control C, control V, right?
Right,
like,
exactly.
They've been written a while ago.
Exactly. They just changed what the thing was.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They changed the date. That's all they did.
They changed the date. Exactly. So I think the Democrats have the easy role. But
in this, really, that is the conversation we want to have, right? Because look, all that was a lot of tee up. Which is relevant because obviously there's so much
stuff going on, yeah.
But it's all related to this broader issue that was related to what the, you know, as you, I think, very well laid out the initial question, which is this balance between freedom of speech, individual safety, and obviously the impact that language has on creating a dynamic for individual safety or harm, and the ability of private companies to self-govern, right? So this is where now when you look at the massive fallout as it relates to censorship and the platform of the president and more widely, other perceived dangerous voices. That's when it gets really interesting, right? So for President Trump specifically, he has been blocked or banned across almost every social platform, once again, for his role in inciting the violence and encouraging an insurrection, right? So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, YouTube hasn't officially banned them, but they've definitely censored a lot of the content that's on there. TikTok, Twitch, Reddit, Shopify, Discord, Pinterest, almost across the board. Right. And all in combination of permanently, indefinitely, major censorship across, you know, different cases. So that was with him personally.
Yeah.
The second thing, and this is, you know, maybe one of the broader topics that we started looking at right away was that what was happening is as many of these more extreme voices felt that they were being censored in platforms like Twitter, a lot of them started to migrate to a new platform called Parler, right? Which has kind of presented themselves as a conservative platform, but really as the alternative to Twitter. Now they had.
By the way, I don't mean to push back, but I just I'm not actually sure if that's how they position themselves.
As an alternative to Twitter or the conservative platform?
No, Parler. I think that they may be. It may be a very conservative or right wing thing right now, but I believe the way
that they position themselves
is as free speech.
Well, they do. You're right. It's more of a free speech, but they do see themselves as an alternative to Twitter, right? So
the platform is directly sort of a response
to Twitter. Very focused on free speech. It's been primarily embraced by conservative voices, I would say. Although, hearing even their CEO, at least the way they position themselves, they want to have all kinds of voices on there. Mm-hmm. But they got into some heat right away, right? And in many cases, it was really specific because of the role that at least many people believe that they played in the planning, in the communication that all happened around the attack against the Capitol.
But
before that as well.
But some of these things are also related too, right? Because a lot of people were, tens of thousands of people purged from these social platforms. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them ended up going over to Parler, right? So
That's right.
There was conversation and stuff happening on Parler based on what we've read before that, but there was an acceleration of that post after this kind of banning, and then kind of like a heating up, and then all these kind of edicts that came down to crack down on them.
Yeah. So, and I was seeing the timeline in one of these articles, and I forget now, but definitely like after the election, presidential election, there was a massive jump up in terms of the people that were really.
It was the number one app in the App Store.
It was
one
growing app. Quite a bit, right? Now, Parler was, I think there was already some signs of concern by some of these other companies that are basically support Parler, right? They were initially warned by Google to better sort of moderate its services as they felt it was being plagued with violent comments even before the attacks on the Capitol, right? Now, as a result of the concerns of both Google, Apple, and Amazon, they in essence deplatformed them, right? Google took them off the App Store, so did Apple. Amazon, which does all their hosting services through Amazon Web Services, also refused to basically tell them that they need to get off their servers. In essence, it was like the kiss of death, right? To the point that the Parler chief executive, John Matzy, he wrote on Saturday that this was a coordinated attack by the tech giants to kill competition in the marketplace. And adding that the service had just become too successful too fast, right? Now, it gets into the why they got dropped, or at least the process they went through. Now, for example, AWS.
And they're also suing, as of yesterday, I think it was, actually suing Amazon as well.
They are. And I would say they're all problems, right? The issue with being dropped from Apple, the issue being dropped from Google, that basically limits them to even be able to be found and downloaded. Yeah, there's ways around it. Getting Amazon Web Services to drop you where you can't host it, like then you're
it's like electricity. Erased. It's electricity.
Exactly. So that's really the major kiss of death.
Yeah.
Now, AWS, right, had told Parler in an email that they have flagged 98 examples of posts that were clearly encouraging and inciting violence, right? Now, within that included everything from, you know, violent threats against liberal leaders, liberal activism,
right.
A bunch of different stuff, right? The problem was not just that. I think that the more I read into this issue, it was a combination of these examples of what many people see as clearly inciting violence. And once again, examples of specific posts that were shared that helped in the coordination of how the Capitol building was being attacked. I think it was also the other thing. But also the combination of that and the response that Frank, the CEO, gave in an interview the next day after the riot. So this would have been on Thursday of last week, right? So in an interview they did with the New York Times, John Matzy, the CEO, said he didn't feel responsible for any of this, and neither should the platform, considering we're a neutral town square that just adheres to the law. Now,
his perspective, just to be clear, his perspective is that if it's illegal, it'll get flagged. If it's not, it's called free speech. That's basically his thought. Yeah.
But by illegal, meaning
things that incite violence, slander, libel, whatever.
But it puts in this situation where him as a platform, they have no responsibility whatsoever to curtail that.
Right. His position is we're the telephone company, basically.
Exactly.
And his position back to the guys at Apple is like, wait a minute. So now we need to shut you guys down for every kidnapper who's ever used his iPhone, for every rapist who's ever done whatever, every domestic abuser, every husband who skipped out on their alimony, for everything that's ever happened on your device.
That's their right. That's their response. Right?
I think this is what's going to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe.
I think it is.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But it is very in line to the same issues that Facebook deals with, that Twitter has been dealing with for a long time, that Google deals with YouTube especially, right? All of these companies are all being asked to do in many ways what feels like the impossible, which is with massive volume, still being able to regulate the content that's in there and be both sort of find this balancing act of being platform, but also being responsible for what's actually there.
That's a question that ultimately all this stuff needs to get answered, is that are you a publisher or are you a platform? Because this idea of acting like a publisher and being protected like a platform does not work. And whether or not, you know, you can make a good case on either side of that spectrum. You should be a publisher and have the repercussions, or you should be a platform. Or maybe there's a third category that needs to be invented. But right now, the problem that seems to have the platforms and the crosshairs of every person somehow in the country is you're not moderating enough, or you're taking away my First Amendment rights. And they have to come to that.
But the challenge of that, Charlie, I think, is that kind of going back to what our initial question was, right? Which is how does what happened sort of change the rules that we think should be there in terms of how this thing gets balanced?
Well, I can tell you,
to your point, look, even if let's say this does go to Supreme Court and they all come down in the area of like, if you're a platform, you're a platform. Therefore, you're not You're like the phone company. You're not responsible for any of the content that's on there. Great. The next time, if there is a next time, and hopefully there isn't a next time, but let's say there is another terrorist attack, mm-hmm. like what happened in 9/11. Mm-hmm. And this all these conversations happen on Facebook. And let's say it's post a ruling of you're a platform, therefore you're not responsible. And if Facebook did not do anything themselves to try to find ways to flag that, to curtail that, to it's going to be a problem. I don't care what the Supreme Court says.
I don't know about
and
that.
And I think that's the basic issue here, because the line that was crossed is that there was a direct attack, and when you feel a direct attack on the democracy of this country, the moment the Capitol Hill, because look, I think people see it, and I see it the same way, is like I put it the exact same category that if protesters had broken into the White House, as if they were breaking into the Capitol Hill or they break into the Supreme Court. Like those three are institutions that we cannot have people be able to go in there with zip ties, with very bad intent, that if they catch any of those guys, by the way, you know who I thought was in most harm?
But it's insane also the fact that, I mean, these people are not even, they don't have their faces covered. They're talking to cameras. So fact that they were these like mastermind, you know, but terrorists is like, they were a bunch of morons.
I completely agree with you. But the fact that they were chanting for Pence, looking for him.
Yeah,
right?
I know.
And in response to President Trump telling them, hey, Pence just betrayed us. He's not doing what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, it's awful. Right? Cult of personality. Like,
would have gone to Pence, there's no doubt in my mind that they would hurt that poor man.
Of course.
There is no doubt in my mind.
There's a whole other thing we have to get into, which is, who exactly do these people who stormed the Capitol actually represent and speak for, right? Because that's like a whole nother conversation. Look, here's where I net out, at least for now, on this discussion about censorship, deplatforming, platform, whatever, parlor, et cetera. And for the record, I know a number of people who, you know, none personally, but who've mentioned to me that their, you know, handles have decreased or whatever it is. There's been, I mean, thousands of people who've had this impact them, right, over the course of the last week or so. I think in the final analysis, I see too much power in too few non-elected hands. I see two non-arguments that are being made, Jesus. Here's one. Non-argument number one is this: free speech is dead. Our free speech is getting killed. Because by definition, free speech being infringed upon is something that the government does, not something that private enterprise does. But that is an argument that's going out there, mostly on conservative circles. We're losing our free speech. Our free speech is being impinged upon. It's like, it's a slippery slope. We're dead, basically, right? That's a non-argument, because on a technical level, there's nothing the government is doing to limit your speech, but it is being limited potentially limited by private companies. Here's the other non-argument that's being made. There is no issue. They can go to any platform they want. Get the hell out of here. When you're talking about something like Google and Facebook and Amazon and the power that they have to make or break a business, to make or break your ability to share information, you can say that, yes, technically, I guess I could go to Reddit or I could go to,
Reddit.
All right, fine. So I can go to, I mean, what the hell's left? I could go to somewhere and talk. But the reality of it is that even though these are, quote, private enterprises, the hold that they have on the way that we operate, the way that we communicate, the way we run our businesses is extraordinary. And there's not an alternative that is equal to or greater than what they offer. And in almost all cases. Yeah. And so I think both of those are non-arguments. Free speech is not dead. Government hasn't done anything different. You still have your First Amendment rights. You can still express yourself. You can do all that stuff. That's a non-argument. But also it's true, it's a non-argument that, like, oh, what are you talking about? Trump could just go to another platform. Like, no. But 99% of everything is Facebook, Google, and Amazon.
Right.
Period.
So I will say to the first point about free speech is now dead. First of all, free speech is not entirely free. It never has been.
Right.
You can't go out publicly and threaten the president that you're going to go and kill him and not expect any kind of repercussion for it.
You can't do that.
So that's always been the case. And we're talking about that right now. Many part of the problem here is that you're having that type of conversation in these platforms in the same way that you couldn't just go out in the street and just say that. You couldn't go on television and just say that, go on radio and say, hey, I plan on kill the president.
Correct.
And expect that, wait, that's just my free speech.
Right. No. But what's wrong with the argument that there's already a law against that? So let's get them for that law.
Sure. So put that to the side, right? So that's sort of my first point of view. The second one, and I understand, and I have to a certain degree empathy to the point that people are making, is that you have these non-elected individuals who are making basically across the board decisions on how things get impacted at a scale that we've never seen before.
All of which live in the same zip code, roughly, and all of which, at least, on the basis of some evidence,
primarily the same coast.
the same coast, the same zip code, and the same, generally speaking, same ideological principles. Yeah. Right, so it's like the part that is scary.
But
isn't to me.
What I find interesting about that argument is that look, one very a very strong staple of conservative Republican policy and mm-hmm. point of view has been always been one about free markets. Just let the free markets do what they need to do. They always are best. Government's inefficient. Government doesn't know what they're doing. Da, da, da. Free markets. This is a perfect case of free markets making a decision. That probably we could look at it and be like, even if I agree with it, I share some of your concern. We're like, but is that right?
But it's not a binary thing, and it's not an absolutist thing. At least not as
I agree with you. But the point that I'm making is
free markets does not mean no regulation. Free market doesn't mean that you can enter every industry and every sector with, you know, just like these companies are doing. They're not just in tech. They're in cars. Sure. They're in solar power. They're in all these different industries.
Yeah. The point I'm getting to is that if you want to solve for that. Free markets is not the solve. It's actually not an issue of even having too much consolidated power because when you look at the number of platforms, we're not talking about just like one or two. It's across the board. Like all these are platforms that basically say, we want no part of this. We want no part in our platform being used in any way whatsoever
to participate
in this kind of insurrection.
Well, let's talk about that. So Airbnb is an example. Uh-huh. Decided to not fill the reservations of a lot of people who somehow they figured out were in DC or trying to get an Airbnb in DC to cause trouble. Now, I don't know how they figured that out. I think there's probably a lawsuit coming on the basis of that. If I had my reservation canceled just because I happen to be in DC, we actually know some people who were in DC specifically for this, right?
Oh, yeah.
And like maybe
they weren't for this, but they were in DC.
No, but I mean, I'm sorry, not specifically this, but specifically at the same time. So
same time.
Anyway, my point is Airbnb, right, can do that. But when you've got hotels.com, booking.com, a bunch of different places I can get sort of rental shares, whatever, that's one thing. When Google says, look at our business, man. We've got, first of all, Google Search, Google Mail, the Google app. We use Google Map. Everything that we use is Google. If Google decided to just tomorrow turn us off because they don't like what we're saying on this podcast, we're screwed. It's not like we can go.
No, that's super fair. I'm referring more to not the Parler situation because I think to your point, with just three companies alone, they sunk this thing immediately. It's just shut down. Google, Apple, and Amazon. That is the triple kiss of death if there is ever a triple kiss of death. What I'm actually more speaking to, Charlie, mm-hmm. is actually what happened with President Trump. And when you look at every single one of these platforms saying we want no part of this, so therefore we cannot let you. Like be on this and literally risk having this kind of language in here that could cause another kind of event. To me, it would be the equivalent that if Airbnb, then hotels.com, then Yelp, Kayak, all these other companies all come out and have the same kind of stance, mm-hmm. right? So therefore mm-hmm. the solve is not necessarily about one or two companies here, is that in these cases, there is going to be some kind of regulation that needs to take place in order to better address this in a manner that feels more equitable, right? Because you could still have, even with a lot of competition, even with a lot more spread it out in terms of these businesses, they could still all come back to the same conclusion with a line was crossed that we just can't be part of. And therefore, across the board, we're shutting you out. In the case of Parler, it just happened to be that it's very concentrated. Yeah. And in these few companies, like basically with a flip of a switch, like you're done.
Yeah.
Look, and I agree with you, right?
I think that there was, to the theme of the show, the idea of a line being crossed and the bell being unrung, I think there's a number of things that were crossed that we don't get to go back on. Number one is to see the Capitol being raided the way it was, to see people lose their lives, people who were kind of fomenting this, who are in no way, shape, or form, I want to be clear about saying this, representing 75 million other people. They're just not.
I agree
not,
with that. Yeah,
not,
I entirely agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
And but on top of that, they just, you know, so that's a line that was crossed, and we got to see that, and God willing, nothing like that will ever happen again. The other line that was crossed, I think, was Google, Facebook, and Amazon. I really do. I really do think that this Parler thing will eventually go to the Supreme Court. I do think that there will be, in any case, regulation. Article 230 of the thing that we talked about the last time. What was it?
I'm blanking right now, but yes,
I forget what it is. But you know, this is the straw that broke that camel's back as well.
Yeah, it could be interesting. Because
I've even seen in Vox, Jesus, today, in Vox or in Slate, I saw an article today about how the taking off of, you know, Parler being taken down is actually something that nobody should be cheering about. And because the reality of it is they can tomorrow decide something else is, the, you know, unpopular or they don't want it. And even if there's recourse to do something, you should follow that recourse legally, criminally, whatever it is. But to just decide, hey, you're done. You know what I mean? That's the part that I think has people very much concerned for what's I mean, I even thought about it. Like, I mean, look, this is just our little podcast, but who knows? Maybe like right. What's to stop somebody from saying, I don't like what you said, and maybe we're going to deprioritize that. I think that's the concern.
I get that. I understand that concern. I think that the issue of your Parler or any of those other platforms, anyone, frankly, is that to what degree do you want to, as a business strategy, stick to the point that I am not going to do anything to try to regulate conversations and really stick to your gun saying, like, we're a platform and we're all about freedom of speech, regardless of what that speech actually is. Mm-hmm. Or am I better off saying, hey, you know, there are certain types of conversations that I don't want in my own platform because there's nothing, even in the case of supporting free speech.
You can make that determination. You can do that, but you're called a publisher when you do.
Right. But the reality is all of these social platforms are already in that dynamic. Right. That's the challenging part about it, because they already are.
They are.
They are in a dynamic of being both a platform and a publisher. But currently, Parler is as well, whether or not they want to admit to it or not, is that they do hold responsibility for what happens on the platform. And basically, Google, I'm not saying, look, and I get your point. I completely understand it. Google, Apple and Amazon say, you know what? You may be all about free speech, but we're not going to be part of that conversation because, to your point, this line was crossed that there is no going back. Now, one additional point here that I thought we should just cover really quickly, because mm-hmm. we've gone a little long already on this topic, is the what happened with Cumulus. To me, that's not even a whole other.
I don't think a lot of people know this one.
So Cumulus, who's also the owner of the syndication company Westwood One, basically took a very aggressive stance on some of this you know, more extreme, you know, rhetoric. Brian Phillips, who's the EVP of content for Cumulus, wrote an internal memo. We need to help induce national calm now. We will not tolerate any suggestion that the election has not ended. The election has been resolved, and there are no alternate acceptable paths. If you transgress this policy, you can expect to separate from the company immediately. Now, that's very strong wording to be putting out there, to that it can even be suggested that there is still some concern or question marks about the election. Mm-hmm. And especially when you think about some of the main talent that Cumulus represents, right?
Sure.
Which includes Mark Levin and Dan Bongino, both of which have amplified, like many of the folks on the very sort of extreme right, some of Trump's more basically lies around the mass voter fraud and some of these issues that literally led to the events that happened this past week. Another one that's not interesting in that category is Ben Shapiro, who is also considered, you know, he's one of the, you know, big stars in more conservative media. However, he's been one that has actually gone against the grain of conservative talk radio by actually telling listeners that Trump has been wrong in his claims at the election.
Yeah, I think Shapiro has been very, very even-handed with his approach to Trump.
Which is kind of interesting.
He did not vote for him, and he was.
Oh, really? I didn't know that part.
He did not vote for
but
him.
But he's one that's known as very conservative. But the bigger issue is this: is like. Now we're not even talking about, you know, now you're talking about actually firing some of these big talent for even raising the point or the question.
Right.
And even for me, who's pretty liberal, like that kind of feels a little wrong.
But then again, the consequences will be maybe I don't want to be distributed by Cumulus and I'll take my show somewhere else. I think that in that case, the idea of Cumulus or Westwood One or any of these, they're not platforms in the sense that Google and Amazon and Facebook are. They are publishers. I mean, and if you're gonna use that designation to fit them, technically they're media companies or distributors. Yeah. But I think it makes total sense to say, hey, this isn't on brand. We don't want this in our thing. That to me is less controversial. And I don't need to be on Cumulus to communicate with my mother or my cousins whatever it is.
I think the part that is a little shocking is understanding the business, right?
I disagree with the editorial overhandedness. I think that it creates a very bad environment. I think that, you know, that's probably going to end unhappily with people leaving and whatever. But at the end of the day, I think they're within their rights to do that. I don't think they're a platform.
Yeah,
I think they're a media company. They're setting, in my opinion, they're making an errant judgment in how they choose to do it. But they have that look. Disney says, hey, we don't want to have this near our brand, and Mickey Mouse can't be too close to X. Those are all arbitrary things, but they make decisions editorially because they're a publisher and they're a brand. I think that's what's happened here with Cumulus.
I agree with you. The part that to me is very shocking, though, is not that they can't do it. Of course they can do it. Like,
Google can do it too, but they shouldn't. I think it's different. I think it's different in degree and in kind. I don't think it's just like a difference.
Let me get it up. So the part that is shocking about it is more to do how big of an audience or revenue these talent represent for them. Like, these are massive stars. So that when you're making that call and telling these guys who are your biggest stars, hey, like, I know this is a big part of your brand. Like, you can't talk about it anymore. Like, that's it. Or I'm going to fire you. That's a super aggressive stance that for a company like this, WestOne, well, by the way, also has a bunch of other conservative talent. I mean, that's taking quite a stance. Like, that's what I was most shocked about. Not that you can't. Of course they can do it. Yeah. And I agree. And they can do other things. But it's literally taking your biggest stars and telling them that they're not going to do what they... It's basically Spotify telling Joe Rogan, you can't have any more conservative, talent on it.
That may come next.
Yeah. But it's to that degree. That's the reason why I was more surprised about this kind of stance.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you could say on one side, it's a super principled stance. What amazingly moral individual these guys are that they're standing on their principle and they're telling them, I don't care how much money is at stake, this is what's right. Great. The other cynical perspective is, look, I need some plausible deniability. I got to put the press release out to say that I did something.
I think
then I'm going to just fight it out with these guys in the hallways and nobody's ever going to hear about it. But at least I can point to the press release. Look, we've seen both. Do I believe one or the other more right now? I don't know. Probably B, just because a lot of this stuff is pretty cynical.
I think this is going to be one. Maybe one of the things that came out, I hadn't thought about it enough that you brought up, is the degree that this then sort of drives conversation and issues that end up at the Supreme Court, especially around this whole dynamic around platform versus publisher. Because it is a very unique thing that has just occurred. And I agree with you. Look, the most cynical view of this would be is that now for any and no reason can these companies basically say, hey, we just don't like you, or we think that you actually in some way may actually be a little competitive with us at some point. Maybe right now you're in your infancy, but at some point, if I'm Google, you know what? Maybe you're going to be a YouTube competitor maybe eventually.
Yeah.
I'm going to take you on my platform and then negotiate you to buy you out. You could think about all those bad.
Exactly.
So I get that.
And that's kind of the case Parler's making in a way, right? Saying we grew too fast, we're too much of a threat.
They are.
They're not a threat from an absolute standpoint. I mean, give me a break. But it's certainly setting up a nice court case. You know what I mean?
Well,
it could be.
It's going to give us more topics to talk about. I think that's a good thing.
It certainly will. Yeah. Look, we didn't even talk about the other part of it, but we got to move on, which is the whole fringe groups and all that stuff. And there's been, last point I'll say is, some things, there's been some comparison to what happened at the Capitol with what happened earlier in the summer with the Black Lives Matter movement and some of the rioting that happened there in certain cases. I've even seen the side-by-side comparisons of lives lost, federal buildings burned, and all that stuff. At the end of the day, that is a comparison that, while it may be true, really has no... It almost has no bearing, right? In other words, and just really quickly for just the record to clarify, there was something like 26 people that got killed over the summer in those protests relative to 5 or so that happened here. There was like $150 billion in damage to federal buildings relative to whatever happened here at the Capitol building. All that may be true, but the comparison doesn't really have a kind of context. In other words, like, you're comparing that only because one side was in favor of one broadly and the other side was in favor of another. They really don't necessarily relate to each other, right? There was something unique about the Capitol Hill event. I agree with you on that. I think it's uniquely damaging, uniquely destructive to the democracy, uniquely abhorrent. All of that's true. And I don't think that for a minute erases or makes untrue all of the devastation that happened over the summer. A lot of people would say for all the right reasons and a right cause, and you got to break some omelets, some eggs to make an omelet. But a lot of people died there too. And a lot of people, a lot of property was damaged and all that stuff. But I think that is a false kind of comparison or a false maybe equivalence to put those things together, if I'm being 100% honest. So we didn't get a chance to talk about that, but that's just my perspective.
Maybe on a different day. I think, to me on that point is the first time in over 200 years and the last time being that
last time we had muskets. Okay.
It was the British did that. I mean, it's just.
We had literally muskets.
That, yeah, but I agree with that. I mean, look, we can definitely talk about it at a different time, but I think we do need to move on.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on. Let's move on. Let's shake it off and let's get into Courage or Cringe.
We have some fun ones.
It's a very exciting assortment. We're actually going to lighten the mood a little bit for about 2 seconds, and then we'll get all heavy and depressing afterwards. No, just kidding.
No, these are all fun ones.
These are all fun ones. I think the first one is some new language that got adopted by the House of Representatives. This is fun. What is this about?
So it almost feels silly to talk about these things, but like so much heavy stuff has happened that why not? Let's talk about some stuff that is not as heavy. So on Monday, January 4th, which now feels like a decade ago, this
right.
just last
like
Monday,
last week.
A week and a day ago, the House representatives approved a new set of rules for the 117th Congress in a 217 to 206 party line vote. Right, meaning that pretty much Democrats voted for it, Republicans voted against it. Now, these rules had a bunch of different things on them, right? So they had new provisions to extend remote voting. That's, by the way, on House measures, not related to voting for presidency or any of that during the pandemic. Protecting whistleblowers, limiting the minority's ability to amend legislation on the floor. There's a bunch of details there that we need to get into. Even making the Office of Diversity and Inclusion permanent to help House offices with recruiting, hiring, as well as serving diversity and issues as and issues to report on each session. But there was one provision within that order that at minimum probably raised some eyebrows and definitely raised some rage, which I love that. Which basically was around
the
use.
Perfect for the show.
Yeah, which was the use of gender neutral language in the House rules, right? Which included pronouns and references to familiar relationships like father, son, mother, and daughter.
Now, to be clear, this is not like how they talk to each other. This is like what is actually written down as the official House stuff.
Great. Initially, I had to right away look at that because, of course, when you read the headlines, it's all very broad in terms of.
Go to the source, baby. Yeah. Go to the source.
So the rule change does not ban, exactly what you're getting to, Charlie, the use of gendered language in the House. Instead, it renames specific official language found in the House rules. So only relates to how it's written in some of the House rules, right? So I thought it'd be fun to maybe talk about some of the examples that were found in the rules that will be changed.
There's been a bunch of memes on this.
So the first one kind of cracked me up immediately, just because I'm slightly childish. So the term semen will replace by...
You need to spell that.
Yeah, exactly.
S-E-A.
S-E-A. C-men. Will be replaced with C-farers. Okay.
Right.
Chairman will become chair. Okay, so he's pretty straightforward. Terms for familial relationships such as mother, father, daughter, son, sister, and brother will be swapped with terms such as parent, child, and sibling. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So mother, father, daughter, son, sister, and brother officially banned from official language for the House of Representatives.
And the rules, right? By the way, and that's a good example. Like I am curious in terms of how that's being used.
The context?
I think the context matters because in many cases what they were talking about, actually the next one's a good way to think about it, is that phrases as he or she serves or he or she holds.
Submit his or her resignation.
Right. It's like, or you could think about it maybe for the previous one we were talking about. If it's like, son or daughter, whatever, brother or sister, you could see, practically speaking, say child, sibling, like that kind of captures it much better than doing the, so I don't know, but I don't know what the examples actually are, right? And then the one that's a little bit interesting is the word himself and herself replaced with themselves. So it's kind of across the board, right? And of course, there was rage and completely different points of view, right? So just to summarize, and I didn't want to add direct quotes, but here's the two log lines for the response. Democratic leadership, proud to be more inclusive, was basically the log line. Mm-hmm. Republican leadership, this is stupid. Like there was no in between. The two like very,
that's very emblematic of where we are.
Points of view. So
do you want to go first?
Go ahead, Charlie. Go ahead.
So I just want for the record to cite one thing, which I think it is just deliciously ironic that the woman who pushed through this new rule change, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, her Twitter handle says, Speaker of the House, focus on strengthening America's middle class and creating jobs. Mother, grandmother, and dark chocolate connoisseur.
Yes.
So that's a person who is.
By the way, that is a classic, in this case, for this story, reference by almost every single conservative story that talked about this. Immediately called that out.
I'll be no different.
Which,
in that
by
regard.
The way, this is not about that, right? It's not about how individuals themselves.
But it is about inclusivity of language, which is supposed to be a priority. But it's a priority only in this context, but not a priority for you anywhere else. That is the duplicity that's actually being pointed out, at least in the case that I'm using it.
Let's see. Let's hear the rest of it. So, I'm already not buying it. Go ahead.
So I don't know if you know this, Jesus, but coming up in high school, I was a fan of, and probably still am to a large degree, of a progressive rock band called Rush.
Okay.
You ever heard of Rush?
I have heard of Rush, right? Yeah.
Canadian
yeah.
rock trio, power yeah. ballads and everything else. And
yeah.
Musically,
I'm not a Rush fan. I'll be the first to
musically very talented. Well, you know, it's an acquired taste, let's just say. But okay. But they, you know, they were famous. The drummer, Neil Peart, just died actually out here in Santa Monica not too long ago. But they were, you know, a rock band playing for 40 plus years mm-hmm. and had a lot of great success. One of their songs is a song called The Trees from the 70s. And there's a beautiful lyric in it. And I thought about that lyric when I thought about this story. And the lyric says, the song is called The Trees,
mm-hmm.
okay? And the lyric says, and the trees are all kept equal by hatchet, axe, and saw.
Mm.
Okay? Because that's exactly what's happening here. We don't drive unity by eliminating whole classes of people and by eliminating a term like mom or dad from language. I think that eliminating those differences does nothing to actually accentuate somebody who may not feel that they fall into those particular categories. I think it just turns everything into a bland, generic, homogenous blah of kind of nondescriptness rather than actually lifting up the beauty of individuals and the beauty of those particular designations. Never mind the fact that, you know, I think it's something to be proud of, to be a mom, to be a dad, to be a brother, to be a sibling. And so I see in particular that one
mm-hmm.
is to me this whole thing, you know, is maybe I wouldn't say it's stupid, but it does seem like the kind of thing in the moment that we're living in today that you wouldn't sort of make job one when you get back from the break. You know what I mean? It's like the first right. thing we're going to do is make sure that we don't ever say mom in our official documents. It seems a little bit, it seems contrived. It seems like a lack of prioritization. Mm-hmm. I can totally understand why people crapped all over it. That's not to say that there are people who don't define themselves in these terms, and I completely understand that, but erasing the 90 some odd percent who do is not the way to solve for that. So for me, this one's a cringe. Expected, perhaps, but there it is.
Yeah, but that's okay. I think a couple of things here is, there are some of these changes, what I can see, and like it just they feel like right. Like chairman will become chair, sure. You know, probably the one example I can give you where this came up to me recently.
But hang on, sorry to interrupt you. Uh-huh. Is it chairman becomes chair, or is it chairman and chairwoman become chair?
I think that's
what it is.
I think it's what it is. Yeah, which so becomes chair. Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's a big difference between those two things. Chairman becoming chair, I'd be like, sure, why not? Because there will be a chairwoman. But right. they're saying no more chairmen and no more chairwomen. It's chair.
Right. Right. It's chair.
Okay.
I think, based on how they said it, that's what I'm assuming. And that, by the way, sounds right to me. Like I don't have any issue with that whatsoever. And now the example that I would give you, which is an interesting one. We were driving with my daughter the other day. This happened a few weeks ago. And we happened to be driving right by a fire station. Mm-hmm. And so she asked me something, I forgot what it was. And I said something fireman. Mm-hmm. Right, something about the fireman, and then she looks at me. And she's like, "Well, why can't women be firemen?" And I'm like, "What do you mean they're firemen?" I was thinking, "Oh, because I'm saying firemen." I'm like, "Oh yeah, like firefighters," and that's the kind of thing that I give a little bit of pause and kind of hearing my daughter, who's 8 years old, ask me this question. And it's the kind of thing where you know when you use the term fireman, it could refer to men or women. Mm-hmm. And it's something that is very commonly used. And of course, I hear it doesn't offend me. I have no reaction one way or the other.
Yeah.
But I also can understand perspective like, look, is there now a more evolved way to say that? But it doesn't always feel like it has to be the male version that sort of is all encompassing for every single version, especially now that you actually do have women that actually are, you know, work for the fire department. Like, why not? And some of these are in the why not category for me. I do find, and I would just love to better understand the familiar relationship, because that's an odd one to me a little bit. Because to me, it's about being more specific, right? If something is referring to a mother, and it's specifically to a mother, then saying that, I don't have an issue with it. But if it's more about using father or using one sex as the definitive for basically all encompassing.
That's not what's happening.
I don't think it's a great way to do it. Or using it in a way as an example instead of, say, using parent, right? Because many times we say he, but really mean he or she.
Right.
Or the opposite. Well, you've seen what some people write it, and then they make it a point to use she as the noun.
Default. Yeah.
Right. I get that. Mm-hmm. I get why it would just be simpler to do that. So those are the ones to me. There were some places here where I could definitely love to see more context of how it's being used. Look, I came in and saying cringe with you, not because I have so much issue with the changes here, because I'm actually...
I'm giving you a standing O.
You and I have talked about it. You're not
on the inside.
You and I have talked about this before, whereas like I'm much more for... Like, I just believe that language changes. And I'm okay with language changing and evolving with the times and evolving to be more.
By the way, I don't disagree with that. It's the method by which language changes.
No, but you're a lot more traditional. We've talked about this.
We have, but my point is the mechanism of how language changes is also important. Language changing by mandate, by fiat, by law is one thing. Language changing by illuminated people discussing things in a much more elegant way and then drawing other people to that, completely different. That's how we've done things, right? But me making this happen, don't you think? I don't know. Give me an example of how it's happened in the past.
We're going to take too long in this one.
All right, but so you're cringe.
So I'm cringe. And the reason I'm cringe, by the way, is just the timing of it. Look, and people are giving these people a lot of crap because, like, really, is this the most important thing? It's not. It's part of a whole set of things that was included. But the fact that even it was included to become a thing right now, we have so many, like, really big things happening, is what ultimately, even if I would agree with some of the ways it's being used, is why I would put it in cringe.
Got it. Okay. Batting 1,000. Very good. Heading forward in with a lot of positivity that we're going to continue to agree, Jesus, in a spirit of
doubt it.
Conviviality. Let's go. It's amazing. Okay. So Stacey Abrams, I guess, is next.
And Stacey Abrams,
who's now
we trust.
Been canonized. Now been canonized.
So this is kind of a funny one. On Wednesday, January 6th.
Also 100 years ago.
Exactly right. So this was the day after the election and the infamous day when there was the breach at the Capitol. But mm-hmm. that morning, before we knew there was going to be a breach in the Capitol, mm-hmm. Governor Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan shared in a tweet an image of a Catholic prayer candle, right, which replaced the religious figure that typically is on the front, which will be, you know, typically either a picture of Jesus Christ, or maybe a saint, or maybe the Virgin Mary. It could be a combination of things, right? But it replaced the figure with the Democratic activist Stacey Abrams of Georgia, right? Now, this is obviously in reference to the role that Stacey Abrams has played in being able to turn the state blue, both for the presidential election and now, and this is really what this is referring to, for the upset that occurred in overtaking the two incumbent senators. Now, when she shared this, that by that morning, Reverend Warnock had already been Kelly Loeffler, and that had already been called. Mm-hmm. And then the other race was trending to see that John Ossoff was going to look like he was going to win. And he has since, of course, has been also David Perdue. But there was, you know, obviously some immediate pushback on this. Of course, these candles are traditionally used by Catholics in prayer. Right, and are very traditional. And some of the initial immediate condemnation came from, of course, the Republican side of the equation. And one in particular, and I quote, "As a Catholic, I am insulted that Governor Whitmer would mock such an important religious symbol to make a political statement," said Michigan Republican Party Chairman Laura Cox. She continued, "I wish I could say I expected more from Governor Whitmer, but unfortunately her term as governor is rife with these type of political stunts and poor attempts at humor. The governor owes Michigan 2 million Catholics an apology." End quote.
Yikes.
So it's as short as that. I mean, that was the main thing. So,
by the way, there's a bunch of them too. I looked it up. The Stacey Abrams prayer, there's like variations. She's in different positions. Etsy stores.
Well, want me to go with this one first?
You need to, yeah.
Yeah. So to me, the issue, I guess, well, let's agree. What are we actually cringing on? The reaction
Her tweet showing the same candle with Stacey Abrams' face on it.
I don't. It's hard for me to say courage because nothing actually courageous about doing it, right? But I do think is so. Yeah, I guess I'll have.
Well,
to,
I don't know. Some people might say that it's courageous. Okay, but that is a point of view you're sharing. That there's nothing courageous. Somebody might say, "Well, that's great because this is, you know, we're recognizing that she is at that level of sainthood because she's been an amazing champion."
No, but the whole thing is not
equality, and who knows? Right. You could say something like that.
How do I say this? Maybe make my case and then I could come back at the end in terms of what my stance is.
Okay, so right now you're listening, go to the bathroom, come back in about 10 minutes.
No, my case is like, it's a bad joke. It's a joke and it's a bad joke. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it makes it okay to make jokes. And the reality is that, look, my first exposure to these humor candles that I've seen thousands of them, maybe hundreds of thousands of them, was mostly in going to Latino markets. Where Latino markets are very known for having these religious candles. That's actually my, as a matter of fact, I even look them up as Mexican candles. They're not.
Yeah.
but I think of them as Mexican candles, but there's, because they're very popular among Mexican Catholics.
Right.
To have, you know, the Virgin, especially the Virgin Mary one is probably the most popular one, I think. But I've seen so many variations of this with Snoop Dogg, with like actors, musicians, with Beyonce's a big one. Like all the time across the board, I've seen it in shirts, I've seen it like in memes. Like it's such a common thing. And it's like a kind of a, homage is the wrong word, but it's like a funny way of people saying like, oh, I'm a, such a big fan of this person, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think it's very popular culture. So from that standpoint, while I can understand, and I understand the point, like someone being offended, this does not act like so offended that this is the first time anyone's done this in a way that obviously it was she's doing it as a joke, maybe a joke that came off poorly, maybe the fact that it's her doing it, but it's a joke that's been done hundreds of thousands of times. And frankly, I've never heard anyone be offended by it till like till this time.
Right.
Right. And that's why for me, it's hard to put it cringe for that reason, because it's, I don't find it that cringy, even though I understand people's position on it. But I really can't say it's courage, because there's nothing courageous about it. It's a bad joke.
So drum roll.
I don't know. I guess cringe for not being good at telling jokes.
I
don't know. It's like,
I can't put, I guess, cringe on the show notes.
I can't really put courage. I mean, nothing courageous about it.
You gotta pick one.
Fine, I'll go courage. Just because I think it's, a, I just don't think, I don't, I don't think it's cringe. It's really that. I think it was a joke that, of course, is a reason to get someone to get all fired up and make it a thing that it's really not.
Yeah, I agree. It is a joke. I also agree that the fact that something is a joke means it takes it out of consideration for being cringy. I think you can say a joke and have it be cringy. Sure. In fact, if you've ever heard most dad jokes, they tend to be cringy, right?
Yeah.
It's where the terminology kind of originated.
I just don't think any, I don't
you don't see thought any malice was,
I don't see zero, I see zero malice against the Catholic faith. Zero malice.
I understand that. I also think that to the point that we've been making for 4 years about President Trump, when you're in public office, there is an elevated sense of propriety that you should bring to your role about the things that you communicate outwardly.
Yeah,
right.
So I get that.
So somebody who's the governor,
and that's what makes you question it, right? Like that's the reason why I'm
right. So you're the governor of a state, and it also helps me to kind of play this out. Let me think about this. Let's say we just talked about Mike Pence, and you know what? In a way, he was a grown up and he did whatever. So what happens if maybe an anti-Trump Republican were to post, Mike Pence with a hijab saying, like the great prophets of Islam, you also, achieved the outcome, right? Or let's say we have a menorah, messaged out and say, you're the eighth candle or lit for whatever it is, right? Or, I mean, you could figure out the examples, right, using other faiths.
Sure.
But I think that Christianity in general is, I mean, sadly, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think it's kind of the one religion that it's okay to make fun of. I think it is. Mm. And I disagree with that. And I think that something that has a usage that is in this context, because I agree with you, there are the Snoop Dogs and the Beyoncés and all those different things. And it's a little bit of almost like this kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of thing that is supposed to say, hey, you're the bomb, right? You're like, you're amazing. You kind of rise to this level. But I think those are not being promoted from a pulpit like this one is, and also so politicized, which is another thing that is kind of offensive to me when religious artifacts and things are kind of politicized. So it's definitely a joke. I don't think she meant anything wrong with it. I also think it's definitely cringeworthy. It's not something she should have done.
I can see that.
And
I can defend it, like, I do think there's zero ill intent in doing that.
And for everybody to know, I mean, these candles are not things you. It's not like you worship the candle. The candle is basically a reminder to for a particular person to intercede for you. So, like, if I would ask somebody here, hey, pray for me, I'm going into surgery. Well, in the same way, if you're a Catholic, you pray for people who have already passed on to pray for you. You ask them to pray for you because presumably at that point, since they're already gone, they're closer to God so that they can pray for you on your behalf. That's what it is. So it's something pretty, it's something of reverence. It's something that is obviously to some cultures, like you mentioned, the Mexican culture, not just Mexican, but definitely the Mexican culture. It's something that's pretty well held and revered. And so it was done without intent. It was also done to be cute and flashy and look how awesome I am and to gain some kind of currency and some kind of political points.
Pop culture currency.
It was. Or to signal to Stacey Abrams, who's a big up and coming person in the party.
Yeah.
Like, hey, remember me? I'm the one who tweeted that picture. Right. Remember me? So like when you're looking for your cabinet, you can remember what I did. It's just cringe around the board for me. It's not even close.
I can see that. By the way, the one thing, and I hate to share.
Are we
this
on
story.
Hour three yet? Because this is really
The one thing I would just share as a funny running joke.
Yeah,
maybe now I shouldn't say it.
Hysterical.
As a running joke that I have with my mom. who, you know, she's religious and, mm-hmm. and she's great.
She's Catholic, yes.
But we talk, I just kind of joke with her when there was something that she's like upset about. I'm like, oh, like, I have like this, I've created this in my mind, this fictitious like Latina mom mm-hmm. who's very Catholic religious, mm-hmm. who is always making the argument of that she's going to pray to her Virgin Mary, like a very specific, from a very specific town, from a very specific lake. Because
that's the good one.
That's the good one.
Yeah, I know.
And I have this ongoing joke with her. And she always like, it always cracks her up. Maybe that's why I always say it. But there is also this kind of mm-hmm. like fandom that happens in I can't speak for any other versions of the Catholic faith, but specifically I'm speaking to like small town Catholic faith, of which mm-hmm. in many cases they do have, and I've seen that plenty of times where people are very like, no, well, this is the one that does miracles.
100%.
Yours is not that, yours is okay. But this one is really good.
Right. There definitely is that. But that is obviously not something that the Catholic Church teaches. It is something that, you know,
very pop culture, though.
It's very Latino pop culture. And pop people culture. Do that. You know, if you're from Portugal, you're going to be about Our Lady of Fatima. If you're from France, Our Lady of Lourdes. If you're from Mexico, Our Lady of Guadalupe. She's the one. She's the Mac Daddy.
No, but the one that cracks me up is when there's like, then all the derivatives ones, like the one from this lake, from right. that, you know, yeah. it's like.
They correspond to all the different apparitions. Right.
So,
yeah.
Anyways.
Well, very good. All right, so
last one.
I lost count where we are.
Bill Belichick.
Are we in agreement or we're still?
We're
agreement, and then we okay. So now we're at 500.
500. Yes.
Got it.
Bill Belichick. So CNN reported that New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick has announced that he is declining the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which he was scheduled to receive from President Donald Trump. Actually, this coming Thursday on January 14th, so in 2 days. Basically, and Belichick said, recently, I was offered the opportunity to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which I was flattered by out of respect for what the honor represents and admiration for prior recipients. Subsequently, the tragic events of last week occurred, and the decision has been made not to move forward with the award. By the way, key wording here, the decision.
I'm going to jump all over that.
The decision has been made, right?
Yeah.
Above all, I am an American citizen with great reverence for our nation's values, freedom, and democracy. Mm-hmm. Now, just a little bit of context, right? So in 2016, Bill Belichick, he wrote a letter of support to Trump. And he told reporters after Trump, you know, glushed about the letter because, you know, Trump has been one that actually, and it's not just Bill Belichick. As a matter of fact, you know, Tom Brady, when he was a quarterback of the Patriots, is also one that had at least, you know, it was public, some, you know, friendship with President Trump, which he was also, you know, President Trump definitely, you know, talked about quite a bit, as well as the ownership of Robert Kraft, the owners of the Patriots. So there's a lot of ties from the team and President Trump specifically, right? But he said, basically, Bill Belichick, our friendship goes back many years. Anybody who spends more than 5 minutes with me knows I'm not a political person. My comments are not politically motivated. I have a friendship with Donald, right? So that's what he said in 2016. By the way, just to finish off the letter that he sent, he also added, I also represent my family and New England Patriots team. One of the most rewarding things in my professional career took place in 2020 when, due to the great leadership within our team, conversations about social justice, equality, and human rights moved to the forefront and became actions. End quote. So, yeah, I mean, Charlie.
I just love it.
It's so interesting. The decision has been made. And by someone that, look, obviously has a public friendship with President Trump, works for an organization that has a lot of ties with the president, coached for many, many years a quarterback with Tom Brady that also has a close friendship with President Trump. Mm-hmm. And to really like sort of decline the invite to get this Presidential Medal of Freedom, it's really interesting. And to me, the first thing that I thought about is, what does this say about the dynamics that are going on within the team and with the players specifically?
That's exactly
that
why.
He felt that the decision had to be made.
This seems,
regardless of what he thought personally.
This seems very,
because there was a lot of like, you better not.
This seems
go do this.
Very
otherwise,
reluctant. The wording is,
it's terrible though.
Super,
if you think
suspect.
About it, right? It makes it worse in my mind.
It does make it worse, right? So I was flattered to do it, but after the tragic events last week, the decision has been made not to move forward.
It's like that I decision, apologize. Because
who made
you are upset by your own reaction right. to none
but,
of my
but,
fault.
Right. But here's a serious question, right? The Presidential Medal of Freedom, established, I think, in the early 60s, people who've been awarded this, Jackie Robinson, Mother Teresa, Walt Disney, John Steinbeck, Neil Armstrong, Tennessee Williams. I mean, we're talking about a list of people who've had a dramatic impact in culture, people who've had a dramatic impact in national security and just really the country's thriving. So this is a major award. In fact, it is the highest award that any citizen, non-military person can earn.
Right.
And it's directly given by the President of the United States. So the question was, at the top of the show, was should the person in the office, in other words, should the award by the President have more to do about who's in the office or more about the dignity of the actual office itself? Like, in other words, you're receiving that award on behalf of the American people, on behalf of the presidency of the United States. Mm-hmm. And in light of all these people who've come before you, you think Mother Teresa probably agreed with whoever it was, Lyndon Johnson, who gave her that thing? I mean, I think that to my mind, it's about the office, the dignity of the office and the award itself transcend the occupant of that given office. I think this seemed like it was a coerced thing, like he wasn't 100% on board, or it's just the clumsiest written press release in the history of man.
It's terrible. And
to me, for all of those reasons, ultimately I netted out on a cringe. Now, if that's the way he feels or that's the decision he's made, more power to you.
Like, it's not the way he feels. It's so obvious by the worst...
The worst
statement you could possibly give
is
the worst, right? Yeah. It's like decision made by somebody else. And then to add the whole thing about I learned so much, and it's like, shut up.
Right.
Like, obviously you do not feel that way.
It sounds
obvious. It sounds terrible. That combination is fake. Terrible.
It sounds
right?
pretty fake. And this is not the most eloquent guy in the world. In fact, if you've seen the Subway commercials that feature him, like they actually riff on the fact that he doesn't really talk. So like it literally just has him staring at people for the commercial for 30 seconds.
Right.
This is not somebody who's an orator, who's somebody who's very gifted in languages. He's just kind of a really great football coach. But nevertheless, I don't think he actually believes what is written in this thing. But even beyond that, because I'm not actually cringing on that. That is a cringe, by the way, the way that this whole thing was done. I'm cringing, if I had to, on the fact that I see that award not being given to you by a person. I see it given to you by people, the people of the United States of America. And I think you have to look back at all the other recipients that have received that, and in honor to them and in honor to the country, receive that medal. That's the way that I would look at it.
So are you cringe or cringe on this?
No,
thing?
I'm cringe. I'm cringe on all of it, but I'm saying I didn't want to I didn't want people to think that I was cringing because of the way it happened. Like the way it happens is also a cringe because the press release is BS. The whole thing is BS, frankly. Yeah, yeah. But I think just the idea of like, I don't like this guy, so I'm not going to take his award when it's not his award. It's the country's award. It's the presidency's award, I guess
so,
is my point.
Okay. So I will start with definitely cringe. So we're green. So we're at what, 60%, I guess?
We can never break 66.
I'm definitely cringe. Because the press release is terrible and how he did it, right? But going back to answer, at least I have a point of view of your question you asked at the beginning, right?
Okay.
Does the award given by the president lose its meaning by virtue of the person occupying the office? And I think the answer in this case is yes. And it's actually really sad to say that. And because the part that I would disagree with you is not the history of that award and everything that it represents, and even Mother Teresa and anyone else that has received this award. But I think this is another example where President Trump set a new bar for how he handles things, where he made the award his award, right? Because one of the things that people call to immediately is who he's been giving his award to. Mm-hmm. And many cases, people that are his most loyal like friends, and people are like, well, wait, why did you give the award to this person? And being like, no, this is the award that I'm giving you, right? So some of the ones in this article that they talked about is Devin Nunes, Jim Jordan. These are both folks that have been like some of the most, you know, loyal political allies for President Trump, who defended him throughout the impeachment process. So he used that award to be like, hey, here's a recognition. He gave it to Rush Limbaugh as well. I think he got Medal of Freedom. By the way, I'm not even arguing that Rush Limbaugh deserves it or doesn't deserve it, but it just comes off as very overly political and actually making the medal and the award about the person. He made it about him. And I think for that reason, I do think that in this case, it actually does diminish it.
It sounds like your courage then. You think it's courageous that he did what he did. Not that it's cringy that he did.
No, it's super cringe. I cringe on the decision that Bill Belichick and how it was handled.
Okay.
I cringe 100% in how it was handled.
Got it.
Right? Because I don't believe it was his decision at all.
Okay, so you arrive at the same place I did, but by different means.
Yeah, yeah.
So let me,
I don't believe he, yeah, not at all. He made it worse, which is, if it was like to try to appease like his players and feeling like he supported them, he doesn't.
Yeah.
It is extremely obvious the way that they wrote it.
Let me just last point to try to, let's take for granted everything that you just said. Trump has made it his award, all that stuff.
Yeah.
What I would have done, if he really believes this, is I would have gone there, I would have received that medal, and then, like every award recipient, they have a chance to speak. And at that moment, speak the thing that you believe is true, but take the award. That would have been a way to basically seize the moment, provide your perspective on what's going on, but not basically sort of erase, to my mind, kind of diminish and devalue the actual award itself, which has nothing to do with you. And frankly, I mean, something to do with Trump in the sense that he's the president for the next 8 days. But beyond that, it's really not about him. It's about the president of the United States, the office of the president.
Yeah.
And in honor to all the people who've come before him, if they would have done that, to me, I'd be even if I disagree with everything he said, I'd be 100% courage across the board.
I think that's actually an interesting way to handle it. The challenge with that, Charlie, is that because of his close friendship to President Trump and what at least many perceive to be President Trump basically using this award as a way to just reward his buddy, people that have stayed loyal to him, that may like overshadow what could be a moment of actually using that, to your point, that moment to actually, you know, say something that he really believes. The problem is he doesn't believe it. That's the reality. He's being forced to not go because he doesn't want to upset his players. And he's getting a lot of pressure. He said it himself by the statement that he made. So I don't think he would ever want to do that because he doesn't actually feel that way.
All right.
At least based on what he's saying, it doesn't seem like he feels that way.
Okay. So look, either way, we wrap up with 2 out of 3, which I will take given all the things that have happened in last week. That is that's a win for me that we can get out of the episode with that level of agreement and discussion. Jesus, quite a week, quite a show. Any words of wisdom, parting thoughts?
No, I'm looking
massages
forward to the next
for all the people who've been through hell the last week or so. What do you got?
You know, I mean, I think the thing that we continue to get to is that, you know, I say the same thing I said last time, which is I'm really hoping we're getting to a moment of healing because we're in a really tough place right now. It's very obvious from what occurred last week, the amount of discourse that continues to be. But I do think that ultimately, until fortunately President Trump is completely out of the office and out of that seat, you're not going to be able to begin the healing process until he's no longer there. And it's sad, but I think it's the case.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it right where it is. I do also hope for continued healing and for a little bit of just calm and peace. We got to get past Inauguration Day on the 20th, so we still got another interesting date to get past, hopefully without a bunch of fireworks or fanfare, but besides the normal anyway. But I agree with you on that. And so we'll close out this episode. Can't wait to see what next week brings.
Yeah,
whatever
exactly
we think right now, it'll probably be the opposite. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening to TDR. Keep liking, keep sharing, keep sending us your perspectives and your opinion, and we'll see you next week on another episode of the Diversity Remix. If you enjoyed this episode of the Diversity Remix, please remember, first of all, to subscribe and help us to spread the word. Tell your friends, family, coworkers, and give us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your listening fix. And lastly, please remember to stop by blackbrown.us, the creator of this podcast, and take a look at our work and our approach at the intersection of diversity and business. The Diversity Remix is produced by Leo Gomez, with production services by Jose Manuel Durquidi and Luis Diego Carranza, and our friends at Juan Diego Network. The Diversity Remix is a production of Black Brown. Thank you.